Hello, I'm Steve Davis. Welcome to this podcast for Australia's National Centre for Vocational Education Research. The interview you're about to hear is with Berwyn Clayton, Director of the Work-Based Education Research Centre at Victoria University, and Professor Roger Harris, a key researcher in the Hawke Institute at the University of South Australia. Berwyn and Roger are two members of a consortium of researchers who spent over 2 years investigating how vocational education and training providers can build capability for the future. There were three key messages arising from the research. Message one stresses that if organizations are going to develop strategies that will build capability, these strategies must focus on the needs of both the organization and the individuals within those organizations. Message two simply states that building provider capability will require a strategic focus. And message three warns that overregulation at a variety of levels can constrain organizational capability and flexibility. I began by asking Roger to explain why he believes organizations must be urged to focus on the needs of individuals as well as the organization's own needs.
Well, Steve, I think the key message that we're wanting to get across here is alignment, that individual development has got to be closely aligned to the organizational vision, strategy, and its business goals. It's about organisations providing the whole of its staff with opportunities that promote learning and ongoing development, whether they are frontline people, you know, the teachers and trainers, or whether they're the support people behind the scenes, as it were. It also relies on organisations creating such a climate that can encourage innovation and foster individual team autonomy and responsibility, a can-do mentality, as one of our respondents called it, and the permission to make mistakes and to learn from making those mistakes.
Berwyn, if I can turn to you, when Roger talks about the need to create environments that encourage innovation in the workplace, is that part of what's behind your call for organisations to strive to provide quality work and quality working lives for their employees?
Is most definitely part of it. A quality working life within these RTOs is critical to enhancing their capability. Staff responding to surveys told us that key elements for them were job satisfaction, work that they were doing being valuable and valued, that they were able to receive support from their colleagues and managers and friends, and that work-life balance was critical. There was much more of a focus on the nature of the work that they were doing. While promotion and progression were still seen to be critically important for them, it was the quality of the work that they were really more concerned about. So for RTO leadership, it was important that they consider new ideas how to ensure quality work and a quality working life. And that's about designing rewards and incentives, about setting up work environments that attract and retain happy workers.
If we could turn to key message two, your report goes to great length to stress that building capability within organisations requires a strategic focus. Can you single out the main elements of strategic focus the report's referring to?
Well, the elements, I suppose, of strategic focus were HR practice, the building of leaders, elements of strategic focus, which brought senior managers in particular from a day-to-day focus on operational issues to one that was much more directed to the future.
Actually, I'd like to pick up on your mention of the HR function, because the report calls for HR practice to shift more towards being a capability-driven function. Perhaps, Roger, can you explain what you mean by that?
Our research suggests that human resource management in the vet sector, and perhaps this is unlike many other sectors, is overly focused on administration and on processing people rather than being strategic. An example of that would be, for instance, that in the large providers we researched, HR managers were rarely active members of senior management teams, despite the fact that HRM, human resource management, is a key element in the business processes of a provider, in its strategic planning and in its developing organisational capability.
Roger, given the example of HR managers typically not being included in senior management groups, that seems to be symptomatic of some issues the sector has in relation to middle management roles across the board. What do you find is so problematic with that layer?
Well, I think probably we can summarise it in briefly in two quick points. One is that they are piggy in the middle. They're looking up and down simultaneously, and that's not unusual. I mean, that happens in all organisations, really, and that is a problem. But the second one, I think, is a bit unlike business organisations, in that in an education institution, they have a dual focus, a twin focus on education and on business, and increasingly business. And this creates considerable tensions for people in the middle. So we suggested that middle managers themselves need to build a deeper understanding of structural and cultural change and the skills required to cope with it. But leaders at both the organisational level and at the systemic level need to give a good deal of consideration about the function, how to rethink it, so that the most talented staff are willing to take on the challenge of this critical role.
If we could finish now with a brief look at key message 3, your research tackled the issue of over-regulation and the way it can constrain organisational capability and flexibility. What did you find out about how over-regulation has these negative effects?
An important issue that we identified was the degree of autonomy that each provider perceived that they had over managing day-to-day business. Some providers are more or less autonomous, and others are parts of larger entities, statewide entities maybe, and can therefore be supported by centralised systems and policies. But this being part of a larger whole was identified as constraining or at least slowing local initiatives for change and the innovative practice that we talked about earlier in areas like decision making or in delegation or more practically, the ways in which commercial income could be used. We heard it said many times that the vet sector is diverse, and the diversity of the vet sector is a major strength. We all know that in the sector. But the corollary to that is that policymakers must, as a necessary consequence, expect a diversity of provider responses in the implementation of policy and regulation. So, to use that catchphrase, one size can never fit all.
Berwin, I know you're familiar with many examples of how organisations are coping with over-regulation. How would you describe the general approach taken by those who are succeeding in this challenge?
Well, Steve, I think they've established different systems and worked collaboratively to overcome some of the impediments. I think the other thing that is going to make a difference is the new AQTF 2007, which has a much more of a focus on outcomes rather than process. One of the major impediments that many people saw was the processes and paperwork that attached to compliance and audit that were taking people away from the day-to-day work and impeding innovation and different ways of working. I think also when one considers that commercial income is now an imperative for many RPOs, that wise use of that commercial income within organisations allows them to provide incentives for different ways of working and encouraging people to perhaps think more innovatively about how they might deliver.
Thanks for listening to this podcast produced by the National Centre for Vocational Education Research. To download your copy of this paper, Supporting Vocational Education and Training Providers in Building Capability for the Future, go to www.ncver.edu.au.